Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
And welcome to the Investor Coaching Show. I'm Paul Winkler. Talking money and investing. I believe that if you are educated, it is hard to take advantage of you. If you don't know anything about it, you just blindly trust, it's easy to take advantage of you. You know, I actually had a conversation with a client this week, and she says, you know, I probably ought to pay more attention to it. And I said, there are just a couple things that you need to pay attention to. And, you know, the thing that I have people pay attention to is benchmarking. I'm looking at the area of the market that they're investing in, you know, whether, and you'll have, when you're diversified, you're going to have a lot of different areas, right? You'll have large companies, you'll have small companies, and you have value and you have growth, and you have these areas. And what you want to do is make sure that you're just looking at the different areas that you're invested in and make sure that the investment vehicles that you're using are keeping up with those. So, you know, if we look back through history, you know, look at large U.S. companies, and you look at large, long swaths of time, you know, you look at, like, for example, 30-year periods, and large U.S. stocks have been right around 10% for every 30-year period. Look at small companies, about 12, and you look at large international, it's about 10. You know, so various areas of the market, historically, the returns are more consistent long run. Short run, it's all over the place because, you know, you might have a good profit year, you might have a bad profit year, it's going to be back and forth. But long run, the returns of these various areas of the market have been consistent historically. And we look at that and go, hey, that's good enough. If professional managers can't do better than that return, then I'm going to be okay with the return of that area of the market. So if it goes up, if the S&P, let's say, I'm going to use that for example, goes up 30%, if my fund that's investing in large U.S. stocks goes up 30%, then I can look at that and go, okay, good. All right, I match market returns. If the S&P goes down 10%, that fund ought to go down 10. Now, that's where people get a little bit confused because they go, well, if a market goes down 10, don't I want to like miss that downturn? That'd be great if you could do it. But what do we know? Professionals, managers can't do it. So hence, trying is a huge waste of time. You know, because what happens is you may get out just before it goes down. Let's say you get lucky and get out before the market goes down. When do you get back in? You know, are you going to get back in and it goes down even further and then get scared again, pull back out, and then it goes up and then you've missed it? I mean, there the number of different alternative scenarios is infinite. But what we know is professionals don't get it right. What's the likelihood of you getting it right? Probably somewhere between slim and none. So when I invest, I want to make sure that those various funds that I'm using are matching or getting in the ballpark of the benchmark. Now, that leads us to the benchmark because some people have come to the conclusion when they hear me talk that, okay, don't stock pick, don't market time, don't use active management, which I believe stock picking and market timing are basically gambling. So yes, you would have come to the right conclusion. So how do we do this? Well, let's just index. Let's just index the portfolio. And you'll see huge fund companies investing in indexes like the total stock market index, maybe mirroring the CRSP 1 through 10. You know, that's an index. Or maybe matching the S&P 500. Or maybe matching the Russell 2000 and the Russell 1000 or whatever. You know, you got various indexes. And the question that you have to ask is, which indexes should I be investing in? Now, if you look at what fund companies typically do, they just typically invest in the indexes that are most recognizable. Is that the best thing for you? Maybe after I talk a little bit, you'll start to question that. Are they really low cost? Well, you might start to question that as I talk a little bit, because a lot of what people think about investing and what is actually the truth or what the case Quite often those things are at odds with each other. Yeah, so I was sitting through a workshop this week, just listening to some guy talking a little bit about this topic, and it was fascinating because he talked about the number of indexes out there. And I quizzed the folks in my office. I said, "Hey guys," just the guys were around, "how many indexes do you think there are?" And one of the guys, Michael, he steps out and he goes, "How about maybe 3,000? And I says, "Wow, that's pretty good. You got the three right." It's 3 million. 3 million different indexes. Now, what is an index? Well, it's a grouping of stocks. If you look at the Dow, that is an index of 30 companies, right? Now, back when it first started, it was like 11 companies. Then it went to 12, and then it went to 30 later on. But they were just 30 companies that were important in the economy. Now, if we look at the S&P 500, that'd be another index, the Russell 2000, another index, you'll have a grouping of stocks that generally meet a criteria that is desired. And you have no end to the number of people that want their own index. Why? Because companies make money licensing their index. Now, if you run an index fund that tracks the S&P 500, you have to pay Standard & Poor's for the rights to use that name because it is going to attract business because people recognize it. So you got 3 million different indexes out there, and they track all kinds of crazy things, really. But you'll have different decisions you make as an investor. And part of those decisions, number one, is how much in stocks do I own versus how much in bonds should I have? Then maybe if you're a little bit more sophisticated, now you're starting to get into which asset classes or maybe which factors do I get exposure to? Then you have to decide, you know, when you're going to tell whether you're doing well or not, what do I benchmark against? And it's interesting because if you look at various benchmarks for small company stocks, you think, well, small company is a small company is a small company, right? No, it's not the case at all. You know, if you take the S&P Small Cap 600 index, that's an index that tracks small companies, and you look at it versus the Russell 2000, which is an index that tracks small companies, and then you compare that against the CRSP, which is an acronym, Center for Research and Securities Prices, U.S. Small Cap Index, and you look at the average difference in returns of those three indexes from 2004 through 2023. Guess how much it is on average per year, average difference in return. Average is 4.9% difference. That's huge. It's almost 5% difference, which could be the difference in return between small companies and large companies. That's a pretty big difference. Well, which index should we be tracking? Go figure. Now, that's a little bit beyond what I'm going to talk about right now, but you know, you look at that and go, well, wait a minute. I thought a small company. So when you own a small company index fund, which market segment is it actually tracking? Do you even know? You know, and so what sometimes people do is they just go, well, I just want to invest in index funds because it's cheap. And I'm all about keeping expenses low, by the way, because we don't get paid by the fund company, so it doesn't matter to me. But, you know, cheap is almost never a criteria that you use in any other area of your life. You know, I could get the cheapest heart surgeon or get the cheapest airline from one place to another. And, you know, maybe a good idea may not be such a good idea to fly a Piper Cub from one place to another. But, you know, you look at that and go, well, why do we do that? Because we think that that's the only expense. But the reality of it is there are a lot more expenses in the investing process than meets the eye. So when you invest, there are things that drive returns. Expenses are just one thing that drive returns. You know, which market am I exposed to? That's going to be one thing. You know, when I look at an index, what is excluded and what's not excluded? Like, for example, when you put together an index that covers an entire area of the market called small companies, well, are you including real estate investment trusts in there? Are you including IPOs, initial public offerings? And we know that IPOs typically lose money in last I saw the data in the first 9 months that they're out there. Are you including bankrupt companies? Are you including things in that portfolio that are not necessarily things you might want to be including? Maybe that you have things in there that are not good, but they meet the criteria for the index. Do you even know that? Remember, that was a real revelation for me 20 plus years ago, because I'm looking at this thing going, you know, don't actively stock pick, don't market time. Okay, index. And then after I did a lot of research, because I'm pretty analytical, I came to the conclusion, no, I did not want to index clients' money in most areas of the market. Most areas, it didn't make any sense. You know, does the fund use securities lending? Do they make money off of securities lending revenue? Do they look at corporate actions? Are they looking at short-term return drivers, which can help offset some of the costs in the portfolio? What is the rebalancing strategy? You know, you can just rebalance a portfolio. If you have 10% of your money in one asset class and 10 in another, and it gets off, you sell the overage in the one asset category that's overrepresented. Maybe it's taking up 15% of your portfolio and the other one's only taking up 5, and just sell the 5 and buy 5 in the other area and rebalance. Well, I've got a lot of trading costs when I do that. Am I taking that into account? You know, so sometimes you'll hear me talk about rebalancing based on deviations from a target, or rebalancing, better yet, based on cash flows. Whatever is underrepresented, have new cash flows go into that category to rebalance the portfolio. But what happens when you ignore the trading costs in an index fund is you could have style drift. The fund drifts into a different area. And I'll talk about that. It can be really interesting when you get into the data on that. I'll talk about that in a second. But you have opportunity costs for missing the returns of stocks that shouldn't be in the portfolio anymore, maybe because they're too large, and then they end up doing poorly, but you don't change the portfolio to get rid of them when they should be abandoned or they should be gotten rid of in the portfolio. You know, so trading costs, you'll have bid offer spread costs. Every time a stock is bought or sold, it is bought, and that price that is paid is a markup over what the market maker paid for it. Just like when you go buy eggs from a grocery store, they buy the eggs, they mark it up, and they sell it to you. Same thing happens. Now, when you have an index, a lot of them are only reconstituted annually. In English, what that means is that if you have, let's say, the Russell 2000 index, and it's decided that certain companies don't belong in there anymore and they need to be moved out and new ones need to be moved in, an index fund that doesn't want to have tracking error against that index has to sell all those stocks that no longer belong in there. Well, then they have to buy new. Well, what can happen if you announce to the world, hey, guys, we're going to be selling this stock, because it doesn't belong in our index. We're going to be selling these stocks, and we're going to be buying these ones in their place. If you have any kind of sense about you whatsoever, what are you going to do? You're going to go, I'm going to buy those stocks before they buy them, because they're going to be throwing a ton of money at those stocks and they're going to drive the price up. Or they're going to be selling these stocks over here, and when they sell them, they're going to be putting a lot of inventory out there and those stocks are going to drop. Well, you can front run it. And somebody asked the question, is that ethical? Is that ethical to do it? And the guy doing the workshop goes, well, you know, it's kind of like you're on a bus or a train and somebody drops their wallet. Is it ethical for you to tell them, hey, bud, you dropped your wallet? It might be ethical for you to do that versus somebody that jumps on the train and starts throwing $20 bills all over the place, knowing full well what they're doing. Well, you'd be probably crazy not to pick up the money because they're sitting there going, well, you know, it's no big deal that I'm losing this money. Well, that's what index funds are doing. They're literally throwing money around in that way through the reconstitution effect, because they know that people are front running them. They know it. They're fully aware of it. But for them, from a marketing standpoint, it is better for them to be tracking the Russell 2000 and using that name, or the S&P 500 and using that name, or the Europe-Australia Far East Index and using that name, because it attracts investor money. And you know what? Most investors are clueless about this stuff. You know, they don't know about it, then it's probably not a big deal. So ignorance is bliss. So that's basically what happens. is you'll have this style drift. Small companies become medium size, and they don't make any changes in the portfolio. And, you know, I was just thinking about just the whole idea about investors in general. And something that we do. Well, I don't do it, but a lot of people do this. You know, let's say, and this is, makes it so hard to do well as an investor, quite frankly. And I've said this before, when you diversify, you're all over the place. You have a lot of different things all over the place. And I was thinking about it in this way. What if you went on Facebook and you saw all the fun that people were having? You know, you saw this person having fun. You saw that person have. And I was thinking, well, wait, this kind of really happens. This is what people do. Now, they call it Facebook depression. Why? Because you go out there and you see all the fun this friend is having. And then this person posts when they're having fun. And then this person over here posts when they're having fun. And I thought, isn't that just what Wall Street does to us? They will show you the top market segment at any point in time. You'll see it in the news. And then the media will be talking about which area of the market is having the highest returns, which area is hitting record returns. And they'll be parading that in front of you. And then all of a sudden you look at your investment portfolio and go, man, I'm pathetic. My portfolio is pathetic. When in reality, the only thing you are seeing is the winner. And it's just like being on social media and all you ever see is when somebody's winning at life. And it makes you feel that your life is pathetic. But why do they do this? Because it sells investments. Is it good for you? No, it's terrible for you. But that is what the investment industry does. Why? Because it's about making money for the investment industry. Now, there's nothing wrong with making a profit. There's no issue with that. I don't have a problem with that. Capitalism is great and everything. But at whose expense? That's why I believe that for you to be an educated investor is such a huge deal.
Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one. Advisory services offered through Paul Winkler, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor. The opinions voiced and information provided in this material are for general informational purposes only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what investments are appropriate for you, please consult with a financial advisor. Paul Winkler, Inc. does not provide tax or legal advice. Please consult your tax or legal advisor regarding your particular situation.